Hello, and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guest is Josh Feinberg, co-founder of Tinnabox and Otso. With his current role as a tech founder and his long career in commercial real estate in Houston, Josh joins the show to explain how Otso is able to provide relief and how small businesses, landlords, and the government can work together to get out of the mess that COVID-19 has created. Josh, thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So I want to check in with you first, because I know you are a startup founder. So what has this experience been like for you with Tinnabox and now a new spinoff company, Otso? So how are you doing as a founder and how's business?
Yeah, so my co-founder and I seem to only launch companies during either natural disasters or global pandemics. We started Tinnabox right when Hurricane Harvey hit. That was kind of when our product was finishing up. And then Otso obviously just launched a couple weeks ago, right about when the crisis hit. So as founders, we've got a few scars on our back, but that's pretty normal. I would say overall, you know, the impact on the crisis has been, it's been stark. We work in the commercial real estate space. As you know, Tinnabox is really a tool for brokers and owners for lead generation purposes. We really operate kind of as an open-ended platform for tenants, with the concept being that they can get access to better information, ratings, reviews, pricing on available properties in the markets that they're looking for space currently in Texas. Otso does something totally different. That's a fintech product that we literally launched a couple weeks ago. We envisioned it a couple years ago. And the concept of Otso is really simple. We think security deposits are super wasteful for both tenants and the landlord. It's silly to keep other people's money in an account that earns no interest. And then the business, usually that capital is necessary. So what we do is we write AA rated guarantees for approved tenants, which either gets them their security deposit back if they're an existing tenant, which is popular right now, and or if it's a new deal or a renewal, we can facilitate the landlord not requiring that deposit at all. So that we think it's a better solution. It's been used in multifamily, so the apartment world, really heavily. We're the first ones to sort of port it into commercial real estate, and that's traditional office, retail, and industrial properties.
I feel like if you launch a company, you know, something's about to happen now, from now on. You kind of been back to back.
Right. There's probably a predictive quality.
Yeah. Well, but it's been good. It sounds like for Otso to, obviously you had to take all of the planning and marketing that you've been doing and kind of pivot to appeal to small businesses now in the COVID-19 shutdown era. So what's that been like to kind of turn from this, from what you kind of originally planned to how you originally planned to present Otso to appealing to small businesses kind of dealing with rents they can't pay at this point?
Yeah, and you talk to a lot of startups, and I'm sure founders will tell you this all the time, but we live and operate on a live wire. So my partner and I, Marissa Limshako, and she's a combat veteran, so none of this surprises her. She's dealt with a lot scarier situations. So I'm really fortunate to be able to lean on her experience in particular, and she's kind of our leader for everybody, which is great. But, you know, as a startup, obviously, you know, running lean is incredibly important. So the first thing we did when we sort of saw this thing start to occur was sort of ratchet down our projections, ratchet down our spending. I would encourage any startup to do the same. Most businesses are doing it. You know, the cool thing about having a startup is that unlike a big business, you can be really, really nimble. So a good example of that is, you know, with Otso, really envisioned, you know, launching it for landlords as a new deal product, you know, i.e. tenant comes along, likes the space, and the landlord can say, hey, you know, in my building, we don't require security deposits. So it gives them sort of a competitive advantage in the market. When the crisis hit, there's been a crunch for businesses. I think this is common knowledge at this point. There's just a complete lack of liquidity. Most businesses do not keep reserves of 3, 6, 8, 10 months. I mean, if you're a massive corporation, you might, or if you've been around 100 years, you might. But the average, you know, restaurant is keeping, you know, they're running on a 13% margin. They're not in position to literally be closed due to no fault of their own for 3 months. So, you know, through Tinnabox, we operate and, you know, we've got 19,000 tenants that have come to the site and done stuff. So we hear a lot of it from the tenant side right now, which is, I just need help. I need rent relief. I need my landlord to work with me. It was not my fault. They closed down the business. And we hear that. The other side of the coin is, you know, landlords are not this nameless, faceless entity. You know, for us as a startup, like I feel this because we pay rent too, but I'm also a landlord, kind of on the personal side. We're really in the same boat here. I mean, most landlords are not like these gigantic REITs. It's not a mom and a pop, but it's wealthy people who have invested in buildings. They're not operating with months and months and months of reserves either. And their only business is to collect rent. So I'm personally, and we can dive into the solutions, I'm for more of a creative mindset right now and a practical mindset. I don't think that these government solutions are going to hit quickly enough. So what I've been recommending, what I've been hearing, is the smart landlords are working with tenants to say, hey, you know, maybe rent's not due this month, or let's do a 3-month extension of the lease, and I'll give you 3 months of free rent now, or maybe it, you know, accelerates a renewal. Unfortunately, there's just a ton of uncertainty in the environment, which I'm sure you're seeing too.
Yeah, so I guess putting you on the spot to kind of speak for landlords in general, what are some options that landlords are looking into, and maybe tenants are able to propose as well?
Yeah, so I've never seen the industry paralyzed on both sides like this. So, you know, I used to be a broker before I started Tenantbox and Otso with my partner. I spent 13 or 14 years as a commercial real estate broker here in Houston. So it was my job in my first 5 or 6 years of my career to work on behalf of tenants to find space. In the last 6 or 7, I did mostly acquisitions and dispositions. So I sort of wore the landlord hat. Point being is I've really worn all the hats that you can wear in the industry. And usually it's one side or the other. You know, well, it's a tenant market, which Houston has been for a while. Or in Austin, it's a landlord market, and there's just not a lot of space available. This is the first time I've ever seen the entire market basically grind to a halt. I did a virtual staff meeting for a brokerage here in Houston this morning with 30 brokers on there, and not one of them told me they did a deal in the past 30 days. I can't tell you the last time that happened. I don't think it ever has happened. We have businesses saying, I don't know what to do, and landlords going, please pay rent. there's just not a lot of certainty going on, so there's this weird, let's see what happens kind of, you know, mentality.
And you kind of mentioned, you know, the government issuing out all of these opportunities for relief, but it's kind of a wait and see of how those, you know, work. So in your mind, what should small businesses be doing regarding kind of government relief efforts?
Yeah, so it doesn't hurt to apply for everything, but I, you know, the PPP program, I think, you know, one, just my personal opinion, is there's a massive fault in the way that it was drafted. It does not allow for 1099 employees to be calculated as part of the calculation for payroll. Mm-hmm. A lot of small businesses, startups included, but restaurants as well, not a lot of them operate on W-2 solely. Now, like if you're an accounting firm or you're a lawyer or something like that, a lot of those are going to be traditional W-2 employees. And that relief, I think, is a lot more in the box for these lenders. They're able to get it done. You've also seen probably in the news that, you know, part of the 08 and 09 crisis is we put a lot of, you know, stress tests and requirements on these banks. Now we're asking them to basically take them all off and divert all their capital into these loan programs. You know, but if you look at it from a banker's point of view, you know, what do? Basically, they make these loans and they package them up and they sell them down the river, right? And that's sort of how we get in trouble. That being said, if you're getting 1% rate, there's not a lot of fluff in there to sell it down the river to somebody else. I don't think the program was envisioned perfectly. I think the intent was good and it will help businesses. But the last thing here is the funding itself. I mean, I think Bank of America, I talked to my guy Friday. He said he saw 178,000 applications a day for the first week. So that's one bank, big bank, mind you, but that's 1 million applications already. They can't process that. There's just not enough people. So even if they start processing them effectively, and the government gives them the right sort of requirements to make things happen and all the credentials for the SBA to get it done and the E-Tran system, I think we're 8, 10, 12 weeks away from money in your account relief. So what do we do in the meantime? You know, one of the things we've been doing at OTSO is telling landlords, look, instead of, you know, they got to follow their lease, they're probably throwing everybody in default that's not paying rent. That doesn't mean you're going to get kicked out tomorrow. But the state of default means that you are in arrears. You're in monetary default. You did not pay your rent. You know, I talk to tenants every day and they're super mad. You know, my landlord sent me a letter and told me I'm out of, you know, I'm out of, or I'm in default or I'm out of rent or whatever. it's just not a good situation. You know, I want tenants to understand this in businesses. The landlords have to send these letters. Like, they're required to. And I wish they would do it mindfully and put like a cover letter on the front and say, hey, I'm literally required to do this. Yeah. Don't hate me. You know, a lot of them do it so ham-fisted and they send out just a blanket notice because, yes, it's the easier way to do things when you have 200 or 400 tenants or whatever. I'd encourage communication. Talk to your tenants. Businesses, talk to your landlords. You know, be ready to prove up your situation. Don't take advantage of this crisis. If you're not affected by it, don't expect relief. But if you are, and you're a restaurant or you're one of these retail businesses that is due to no fault of your own been shut down, there's a lot of arguments on what's going to happen here. I think some businesses may elect not to come back at all, and that's their choice. But for the ones that want to continue, you got to work with your landlord. Call them, tell them, look, I did X amount of sales last March and last April. Look at me now. I've done 0 or 10% of that. That's the type of ammunition they can use to go to the lenders, who are the ones who need to provide relief here. 80 or 90% of commercial real estate is owned by debt. Most landlords do not own their properties outright. And so they've got a piper to pay too. And they also have expenses like insurance and property tax. The government can provide relief with property tax, which I think they should. And we have lenders who can provide relief on the mortgage side. Even if it's 90 days of forbearance, that's immediate relief that they can say, hey, tenants, we're cool for 90 days. Because I do think we're going to get sort of some openings here in May. I don't know how you feel about it. But let's not act like there's going to be like a gangbuster rush. There's probably going to be trepidation in the market. And these businesses are going to feel it for the rest of the year.
I think commercial real estate is, you know, one of, if not the industry, that's the people are keeping a close watch on, because it is about the fact that we can't be in physical spaces, operate in a traditional office setting, in a traditional retail restaurant setting. So kind of thinking forward to the rehabilitation of these types of companies, what are some indicators within commercial real estate that you are personally watching and we can pay attention to and tune into see kind of how we recover?
Yeah, so it's a little early to say, but I heard this on CNBC, so I'm going to repeat it. When restaurants are open and dining starts to occur, I think to me that is a strong sense of normalcy. Some people have said things like sports are open. Look, on a personal level, yes, I want sports. But on a business level, I think it's far more important to get Main Street back to work. And I want to see these nail salons reopen. I want the residential realtors to be able to go to their offices and tour houses. I want the commercial real estate guys to be able to tour office spaces. I want some normalcy back in the market. To me, that is people occupying the spaces or bringing customers in more appropriately. Is really what I'm going to see is normalcy. So I saw something, maybe you know more than me. Abbott said maybe that there'll be some sort of executive order this week about what potentially reopening some of these businesses could look like. That's the type of government we need right now. We need some light at the end of the tunnel. Uncertainty really creates paralysis. It really does. And, you know, we don't know how long this is going to go and where is the light at the end of the tunnel. That's not going to get us anywhere. It's going to cause a massive amount of default, whether it's from businesses or it's from landlords. What we need is, okay, well, you know, this many infection has to be this rate and this many people have to test, you know, negative, and then we can reopen this portion of the county. That's the type of government I would like to see. I suspect we won't see it as well as, you know, we want to see it, but I appreciate the effort. I don't envy being a government official right now and trying to balance, you know, literally life with the action. There are physical effects to economic damage. It's sad, but there are legitimate physical effects to this too.
Well, I wonder, one question I have kind of hearing you set the scene like that, you know, with Tenavox and Otso kind of operating statewide, how do you see where Texas is at compared to the rest of the country in terms of its economic standing? I know, I guess the energy industry has been hit kind of double of oversupply. But I just wonder if you've seen that really penalize the state compared to kind of other state economies.
So the short answer is it's too early to tell. But if we look back in time and look at 2008 or 2010, I think there's some good lessons to learn there. And I will say this, we've moved a lot faster this time to take action. Well, the effects of that action is too early to know. Texas in general is a great state to do business. It's the reason why we've seen a massive influx of capital and new residents over the past decade. It's got lower taxes. It's an easy place to operate. It's got simple laws. Huge consumer. It's obviously got a massive economy of its own. I think we're like the 13th or 14th largest economy in the world by ourselves. So Texas on its face is amazing. That being said, city to city, it's a different story. Austin is not completely dependent on, you know, one lever to pull. Austin's got great medical, it's got great tech, it's got great research, it's got professional services to support those. It's what I would call a healthy, diversified city with major employers making major investments in big tech. You had Oracle, Apple, Facebook, Google making massive investments into Austin. Those aren't going away. Those companies are generally healthy. They're going to continue to hire, and they're going to continue to drive that market. If anything, Austin was too landlord friendly. So a little correction there probably resets things in a good way. Houston, totally different story. We were sort of just barely starting to recover really before all this happened, sadly. And that was with one of the strongest economic indications nationally in a long time. We suffered greatly during the last oil crisis, and that's, you know, we're going to get in double whammied here. It's, you know, we had Hurricane Harvey, and now we've got this global pandemic, and now we've got an oil issue too. It looks like there was some progress made today, but the bottom line is we just have too much oil. The supply is massive. It's going to take years to use up that supply. Well, that directly affects us as Houstonians. You know, the energy markets account for 30 or 40% of our employment, whether it's direct or indirect. Yes, we have a great medical center. Yes, we have great professional services, but it would be disingenuous to say that the energy problem is not a big problem for us. So as the country starts to recover, I do expect Houston to take longer. It's generally not looked at as an amazing market to invest in because of that. That's why I think you've seen more money pour into places like Austin, and it's why you've seen money pour into places like San Antonio even, and Dallas. Houston is sort of heavily dependent upon energy, and maybe that there's a shift that has to occur there. I don't know. It's too early to say, but I expect it to take, unfortunately, maybe a little longer for Houston to recover. I expect massive vacancy in the office markets. We were in the 20s before this. We'll probably be in the 30s without question. I mean, just with all the companies that have laid off people, those jobs aren't going to come back right away.
Right. Yeah. I think that's kind of the general consensus is it's a very different story. Texas recovering from COVID-19 shutdown, mostly because of the pickle it was already in, being such a huge market for oil and gas. So I want to circle back to OTSO, since it is something brand new and something that kind of can provide relief in a way that doesn't require a government check to come in the mail. Talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the reception you've heard from people that are looking into this option, and how people can look into this option, how they can get involved and maybe start applying.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, full disclosure, like, because our market is so paralyzed, like, as a startup, we're having a difficult time getting in front of people we normally have no issue getting a hold of. I talked to a guy today. I've been trying to get hold of him 3 weeks. He's got 1,200 tenants in his portfolio. I mean, this is a massive real estate organization. I normally, you know, there's lots of downtime that we can kind of connect and sync up about solutions. Well, he's panicked. He has, you know, he's a retail guy, a massive amount of his portfolio is asking for relief and they need help. And so we were able to chat briefly today and introduce a solution. And basically what I'm getting from landlords right now is, yes, this sounds useful, but I got to figure out how to like put the fire out before I'm going to do it. As if you ask businesses, they want their money back like right now. what we're totally seeing is kind of this halvesies kind of deal. Landlords are basically saying, look, you need to apply for stimulus so that you can, most importantly, pay payroll and stimulus. And the second thing should be rent, in their opinion. That's kind of how leases work and most operating expenses work anyway. So what we're suggesting to landlords is, look, it's free to sign up. Doesn't cost you anything. Essentially, what we do is we onboard the landlord and we provide them with a secure link for their building. They can send it out to every tenant they've got. And the way that the tenant can use it is in 4 or 5 minutes. It's like a rocket mortgage style process. They're going to go ahead and give us the information we need. It's pretty easy. It's smooth. At that point, they're going to get approved, usually in the same day. Now, with an approval, the landlord's going to get a notification and say, okay, well, this tenant, you know, had a $10,000 security deposit. Hey, landlord, your policy is going to cost, you know, $80 a month or $50 a month or $100 a month, somewhere in that range. It's based on creditworthiness. And so the landlord can come back to the tenant and say, hey, this thing's going to cost you $50 more a month in rent. Let's sign an amendment. I can get you your $10,000 back. Now, what I'm hearing from landlords is, yes, I'll do that, but I want them to have to allocate it to rent. And so real estate is really crazy. Like, there's always negotiation going on. There's not just like, hey, here it is. So we're seeing a lot of that is landlords saying, I want to use the program, but I want the tenant to agree to allocate it to rent. Again, we're so new and it's so new that we're still working through our process with, you know, probably a 10 of those going on like right now. But we're pretty happy with the response from businesses. They obviously want their capital. I think in a neutral market, if COVID hadn't happened, we still shouldn't be putting out cash deposits, period. The easiest way to get involved is just to visit us at otso.io, OTSO, otso.io. Go to our website, click tenants. You'll see a ton of information. There's also a lot of resources on how to apply for PPP, how to mitigate your rent, how to talk to your landlord, the type of email you need to provide if you're going to ask for formal relief, recommendations for attorneys, recommendations for brokers. I mean, real estate is, I got a blog coming out today. Real estate's a team sport. You need these advisors now more than ever. And trust me, they've got the time to talk to you. Don't do anything unilaterally. Talk to your landlord, talk to your broker. If you decide to go the legal route, you know, just I'm not going to come back and I'm not going to pay. Just know that it's going to get litigated over a period of years. The courts are going to be super backed up when we get back to business here. And your attorney is going to have one opinion, and I promise you the landlord attorney has another. So I'm personally, you know, not to knock attorneys, I like to avoid them as much as possible. But I do think we're going to see our share of litigation coming out of this crisis.
Yeah, I like that commercial real estate is a team sport, because that kind of echoes what you've told me previously about how there's this kind of assumption that it's the landlord versus the tenant, but in all actuality, they really need to cooperate to advance each other, you know, in that way. So
yeah, we're exactly right. There's this idea that it's adversarial, and yeah, in negotiations it might be, which is why brokers are so useful, because they sort of take the emotion out of things. Mm-hmm. You know, operate on the other party's behalf, which is nice. But if you look at the average deal, the landlord's usually writing a check to put a tenant in a space. So a new business comes along, they want to open a restaurant. Yes, there's a big investment both personally and from an investment perspective for that business to go in. But remember, that landlord's probably writing an improvement allowance or a build out check, or providing free rent, or writing a check to a broker for a commission. There are big numbers involved for the other side too. And I think smart landlords, you know, make that known and try to be fair and operate ethically, but it would be naive to say that everyone does. So yes, there are adversarial relationships, but I think overall, remember, like, they're sort of partners together on every deal. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit more about kind of how you feel about the lender situation and how relief should really be at that level. And I know you're very connected and you're very up to date on what is out there. So what do you see kind of a perfect opportunity to provide relief on that level? Is it tax space? Is there like a PPP for lender at the lender level, I guess, so to speak, like something that can come in and provide some relief?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the Federal Reserve is really good at printing money for themselves. they're not super good at getting it to Main Street and people that actually need it. And I'm going to throw landlords on hold into that Main Street calculation. Like, think of the guy who owns two or three buildings. Don't think of the, you know, the big REIT who's publicly traded. They'll figure it out. Most real estate's owned by regular people. Yes, they're on the wealthy side, but they are regular people. And so the government, you know, and then I think in this next stimulus bill is talking about expanding a program they call TALF, T-A-L-F. That program is built to provide relief for CMBS debts. That's commercial mortgage-backed securities. That's a lot of acronyms to say that that's for the richest of us. That's what REITs use constantly. CMBS notes are not super popular in Texas. You see them a lot more in New York. And frankly, they're becoming less popular overall because they're incredibly onerous. Only 15% are our estimates of properties have CMBS debt. So that's a perfect government thing. So let's throw in a program that helps literally the minority of the ownership. It doesn't help a lot. So what can banks do? Well, this isn't like 2008 and 2009. Banks are generally a lot more liquid today, mostly because of what happened in 08 and 09. They're required to behave better, which is good. I think they need to step up and help. It doesn't help a lender at the community or regional bank level to take back a property. They're not good at it. It's expensive for them. They have to put a lot of people on it. it's not a good situation for the owner of the property or the lender on the property. So a practical solution here is this. 90 days seems to be the number that we're hearing that seems fair. So whether it's 90 days of forbearance or 90 days of relief, whatever you want to call it, basically 90 days of no debt or no mortgage payments, or even interest only, you know, something small that the landlord can offer to tenants and say, hey, I got a reduction of 80 or 90% of my debt obligations for 3 months. So I'm going to give you the same reduction in your base rent or your gross rent or whatever they want to work out. There's a middle ground there that saves tenants a lot of money. And there's a middle ground there that really doesn't hurt lenders at all. Most notes or most debt is 8, 10, 15, 20 years and amortized for longer. It's at a minimum 5 years. So adding 3 months to a note should not be a hard situation. But I'll tell you, I've probably had 50 conversations with lenders in the past 2 weeks. It is not easy for them because they're not set up to make decisions individually. They're set up to make decisions portfolio wide. So right now they're saying on the phone, yeah, I'll work with you guys. We're going to figure it out. Let me go to my committee or let me go to the board or let me go to my underwriters. But we haven't seen anything formalized yet. Mm-hmm. I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal that said roughly half of businesses in America didn't pay rent. If lenders don't think that's going to affect them, they're on the best drugs on the planet. Because yeah. There's just no way. That is absolutely going to affect them. Again, lots of different motivations. Everything's decentralized. Every property owner is different, has a different debt usually. But we need, I think, individual lenders to step up here. I don't think the government is going to step in on behalf of landlords. I don't even think politically that looks very good. The one thing they can do at the local level is defer or not collect property taxes, which I know most in Texas, that's where most of our money comes from. I don't know what to tell them. Taxes are a big hurt on the real estate side of things. Like that's the highest thing we pay outside of our debt obligations. So getting relief on taxes is another way. You know, if they say, hey, we're going to spread your taxes out over 3 years instead of one, those are solutions the government can help with now. Will they do it? Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I knew.
I realize every kind of COVID-19 related discussion can get a little bleak. So at least in the past couple episodes of the podcast, I've kind of, it has turned into a bit of a positive spin, mainly because we are using, I think, technology in a different way to kind of power through, whether that's telemedicine or, you know, just opportunities for some tech startups to rise to the occasion. And, you know, if they survive this, they can survive anything. So I wonder kind of for you as a tech founder and as a representative of commercial real estate, what do you see as kind of a silver lining in the situation? What are we going to learn from this time period that we're going to take into and that's going to advance the industry?
That's a great question. I think first and foremost, great companies are built during crises. That's been true for a very long time, way longer than you or I have been around. There are smart people working on big problems, no matter what the economy or the outside markets are doing. And when they are able to survive periods like this, they come out significantly stronger than their competitors and or weaker or outdated concepts. So I think you're right. We'll see a fundamental shift in the way we do things. We may embrace solutions like telemedicine or in other industries like e-commerce, which severely had already affected retail real estate. It'll probably accelerate the evolution of those spaces. Think about abandoned big box retailers. That was already happening. Well, now there's a great excuse to completely redo it. Whether the lenders are involved or not, we're going to have a glut of sort of spaces that we're not using the way we used to use them. So I think in the real estate world, creative solutions on how we're going to recapture or reimagine real estate, that's going to be fun. That to me is the joy of real estate. It's just, it creates a lot of opportunity. It creates jobs. It creates opportunity for businesses to fulfill their dreams. And then vice versa, you know, you're building something from nothing. You know, there's a piece of land there that a building goes up. That's really cool. Nationally, I do think we will make it out of this. There's no question. The country's not going away. I mean, in the health crisis, I mean, I'm not qualified to talk about it, but it seems like, you know, we're on the lower end of the model. So that's good news as well. I mean, we haven't seen as much sort of negative news on the health side in the past week. I think that's all good. You know, hopefully we're trending in the right direction. For real estate people, down markets, if you have cash, are an incredible opportunity. Just like when Amazon was selling at a 30% discount 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever that massive drop occurred, we're going to see some properties suffer and some really smart, imaginative, better owners take advantage of those opportunities. And that'll really accelerate the reimagining of some spaces and buildings that maybe the city owns, places like the Astrodome, that lenders are just tired of, or the city's tired of, or they need capital for other things. I'm of the belief that let's get those properties and those businesses into the hands of people that have passion for them. This crisis will provide for that cream of the crop to rise, those people that want to take these challenges on. To me, that's exciting. It's hard to think about that because every day we see more death and every day we see businesses struggling. I hate that. And I hope that goes away really soon. But I do think we're going to look back on this in a year or maybe two or three and say, wow, you know, that company did something really great here. Or that company did something amazing and built something that wasn't there before. America's super innovative. We lead the world in tech, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, I guess I wonder which kind of avenue, and maybe a mixture of both, we're going to kind of go down long term, you know, from people being hyper aware of interaction with other people, you know, since we've all been forced to maintain 6 feet apart from people, you know, even wear masks in a situation where we've never had to do that before, or if we're going to kind of value our time in public places and in different, you know, buildings a lot more since we haven't been able to do that for the past month and probably end up being, you know, closer to 2 months or even more. So I wonder if we're going to, you know, value that time outside of our homes more or just be terrified going into.
Well, it's a beautiful day. So I hope people are going outside right now after this. Well, I guess this will be on a different day. That being said, if you look at how humans are, I think we crave social interaction and we crave being in spaces with each other. And that has probably been one of the most challenging things about the past 6 to 8 weeks is we have asked each other for the common good to not interact as much. What I think will have to happen for people to get back to quote unquote normal, I really think we'll have to have a vaccine. We'll have to start, or hopefully we're able to, treating this flu like other flus, because it is a flu. It's just a severely nasty, terrible flu. We have to be able to say, all right, well, we've got a vaccine for this, or we can test for it really well. Do I think all Americans in a year are going to be wearing masks and staying 6 feet away? No, but I think we need a vaccine to provide that level of comfort. That's kind of what I alluded to earlier. You're right. There's going to be trepidation when people go out to dinner. They're not going to feel comfortable like in those table settings or bar settings that then they use, you know, we all used to sit next to each other. That'll probably be hard for the next few months. But as we start to see, well, we've got some ammunition to fight this virus. I do think you'll see people get back. You know, right now, the scary thing is, well, we don't know how it will affect you if you get it. We will know how it affects people in a year. For sure. We'll have the data and we'll probably have some medical remedies for those people that do get really sick from it. At that point, I think doctors will say, I hope that we're able to interact normally. But I think normal doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Well, to kind of close up, I typically ask on the podcast, but it has become much more of a loaded question in light of COVID-19. But, you know, what keeps you up at night when you're thinking of the future, when you're thinking of your businesses and the industry as a whole? What are you kind of closely watching?
It does. It sounds crazy to me, but like the only thing now that's keeping me up, and I feel very confident in our business model. I feel very confident that we've built a solution that's going to help people. And that is a company should be your goal. If you build something useful and something relevant, you will have a good company. Start there. People, oh, wouldn't it be great? You know, again, worry about your product, model it correctly. There's a great book, and I'm forgetting the name of it. All Marketers Are Liars. Read that book. And I think it's by a guy named Seth Godin. read that book. It tells you all about, don't have any fear about talking to customers. I was fortunate enough to go through a couple accelerators that really, you know, blasted that behavior out of me. But assume you're wrong and force people to convince you that you're right with your assumption. Now more than ever. So I don't have those trepidations anymore because I validate assumptions and my partner validates assumptions with third parties. You cannot, you know, you're not always your own best counsel. We want to predetermine that we're going to be successful. That's not true. Nothing's predetermined. You got to go get it and go earn it. And I think for the smart companies, now's the time to talk to your customers, your clients. If you have a good idea, have 20 people try to convince you it's a bad one. And if that's keeping you up at night, that's kind of a cool, positive thing. Those are the types of things that keep me up at night are my assumptions right? And then usually what I wake up with and go, how can I, you know, can somebody convince me that this is a bad idea or that what we're doing is wrong? It really just keeps you honest and accountable. And those are the types of things that keep me up at night when I'm going, you know, is this new idea going to work or is this new messaging effective? How can we make ourselves better? How can we provide more resources? How can we make ourselves more relevant to the community and the people that we're trying to help and the businesses we're trying to support? If we're doing that well, then I'll sleep good. And I think for now, I'm sort of in the same boat with this. You know, what's going to happen? That keeps me up a little bit at night, but not a lot. I'm confident that we're going to return things to normal. I've seen a crisis or two in my day, and I'm confident we'll come back and you'll be doing these podcasts for the foreseeable future with everybody being negative, but hopefully next year we're talking about how great the economy is.
Something to look forward to. And I think that's actually, that ended up being really great advice for startups to kind of check in and keep close relationships with people who can keep them humble and keep them on track. So thanks for that.
Yeah. I mean, does the crisis affect you? And it does. I mean, I've seen startups completely have to rework their model in the past 3 weeks. That's okay. I mean, I personally had to throw out 6 weeks of messaging. It is what it is. You can always rewrite it. Be nimble, be flexible. And again, just assume that your assumption is wrong. Let somebody else prove you right. If you have that mentality, I think you'll be really successful.
Well, great. Thank you so much for that and for kind of weighing in and representing commercial real estate as it kind of pertains to this crisis and small businesses here in Houston.
No, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. So anytime, and keep up the good work on the website. We love the articles.
Awesome. Thanks.
Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Please consider hitting subscribe, sharing with a friend, or giving us 5 stars. Tune in next week with another episode.